A morning. Today's daf in Chulin Samach Dal. We're in Samach Gimel Amud Beis. We're in the bottom of the Amud. Excuse me. Amar Rav Yitzchak. It's the first wide line towards the bottom of the Amud. End of the line. Gemara's continuation of its discussion regarding birds and the kashrus of birds. Yesterday we spent a good amount of time yesterday going over many of the birds that existed in Bavel circa 3rd, 4th century. Which of them are kosher? Which of them are not? Okay. Admittedly, not that helpful to us here living. Short 1,700 years later, but okay, but it's good information. The Gemara went through a number of the birds listed in the Torah. 20 birds are listed in Sefer Vayikra, Parsha Shemini, Perek Yud Aleph. Another 21 birds, not another, but 21 birds are listed in Devarim, Parsha Shrei, Perek Yud Aleph. And what we did yesterday, we compared and contrasted some of the names that were used. They're not exactly identical to one another, the names that are used. And so the Amoraim gave various approaches in terms of how to coordinate and to synthesize the two lists that are given. And on top of that, the other challenge that we had yesterday was to get to the number 24, meaning we know that there are a total of 24 non-kosher birds. That's a Masorah that we have. And so how do we get from the list of either 20 or the list of 21 and get to the number 24? So that was a part also of yesterday's daf. We're going to pick it up right where we left off yesterday with the at the bottom of the Amud. Am Rav Yitzchak Oftar Nechal B'Masorahs. So if you have a kosher bird so you can eat it, you have to have a Masorah, you have to have a tradition. Right? And when we say tradition, what exactly do we mean by tradition? Take a look at Rashi right over here. Im zachorhu ba'adam kasher, shachlo. Let's say you know that an adam kasher, right? He's a good guy. And you know very well that this person is eating it. O shemasalo rabo, o tzayid chacham shu tahor, right? Either a chacham comes over to you or a tzayid chacham. Like somebody who really knows the zoo business.
A hunter who is a chacham. It's like
you'll see when we see the Gemara together. It's going to be clarified. So tahor. So under those circumstances. So once you have a Masorah, so then it's going to be tahor. In the Gemara, continuing in the Gemara, the Amr Vizchav of tahor nechal b'Masoras neman atzayid lomar of zeh tahor, and the tzayid can tell you that the of is tahor. So Masolo Rebbe, Masoli Rebbe. So the my Rebbe taught me that this was going to be okay. Now we're just using the term Rebbe over here. Now the term Rebbe being used over here could mean one of two things. Could mean what it traditionally means, which is that he went to yeshiva, and he had a Rebbe. But Rebbe also over here could mean simply that it was his professor, it was his teacher, it was his mentor. So I'm Rav Yochanan v'husha baki b'hemu v'shmo seim. Now, before we clarify that point, so Rav Yochanan says that you have to be familiar with the birds and the names of the birds, like we said yesterday's daf. Now, by Rav Zeh, Rabu Chacham or Rabu Tzayit. Good. And now the Gemara asks the question, when we say Rebbe, what do we mean by Rebbe? So Rebbe could mean, like I said just a moment ago, could either mean that it was his Rebbe in yeshiva, or could just simply mean his mentor, meaning that he was a student of another hunter, another bird trapper, and his mentor was the one who told him. So Tashma Dam Rav Yochanan v'husha baki b'hemu v'shmo seim. So the Gemara says, well, I think we're going to get the answer correct based on the following. Remember, just a moment ago, we had Rav Yochanan said that you had to be a baki b'hemu v'shmo seim. Yamar b'shlamo rabu tzayid shapir. So if we're talking about we're talking about somebody who is mentoring under another bird trapper, makes perfect sense. In other words, you know about the birds because you studied under somebody who knew the birds. But he amar rabu chacham bishlam shemayo gamirlo ela inu miyadalahu. But if you're talking about your rabbi yeshiva, I understand that your rabbi yeshiva knows the names of the birds because he knows chumash. He knows chumash. He knows the names of the birds. That part's great. But do you think your rabbi now spends a lot of time out in the field, and your rabbi is sitting there with his his binoculars. And he sits there with his binoculars, and he's now bird watching, checking off the list. Oh, we saw this bird, we saw that bird. Meaning the Gemara is assuming. Now, obviously, it's good for a Rebbe to know more of the outside world, but the proficiency of the Rebbe obviously is in Chumash and in the Torah Shabbat Peh, and it's not going to be in the birds of the world. So when we say Rebbe over here, most probably what we mean is Rebbe Tzayed, and the Gemara, in fact, feels that this is a great proof. Alav Shmamina, Rabbi Tzayed Shmamina. Yep, it's talking about a Rebbe Tzayed. Okay. And now, as we are towards the bottom of the Amud, six lines from the bottom of the Amud, five. Okay. We're moving. five lines from the bottom of the Amud. So now we're going to be starting today's daf. I mean, we started already, but the sugya for today's daf, and that's going to be a discussion of eggs. The purchasing of eggs and the consumption of eggs. Let's start off with a very basic rule. We all know it, but let's say it. And that's Kol HaYotzei from HaMinatameh is Tameh, and Kol HaYotzei min HaTorah is Torah. And it's a very simple rule. If something is a product of that which is kosher, so the product is going to be kosher. Milk, eggs, which are coming from kosher animals, are they themselves kosher? Mm-hmm. And Kol HaYotzei min HaTameh, Tameh. And anything which is a product of that which is Tameh is in fact going to be Tameh. So milk or eggs that comes from a non-kosher is obviously going to be not kosher. Now, milk and eggs, by the way, are mutually exclusive. That which produces milk is not going to be producing an egg, but okay, neither here nor there. So the starting point of the discussion is very simple and very clear. If the egg is emanating from a non-kosher bird, so the egg, of course, is not kosher. And if it's emanating from a kosher bird, so then the egg, in fact, is going to be kosher. There is a discussion which actually is not here, but it's in the Masechta Beitza. It's a great question. When do the eggs become parv? Right? You think about it, right? We all know. So eggs, of course, are parv. So, but they come from a chicken, which is fleishik. Now, of course, you and I both know, we're going to learn later in the Masechta, that the chicken status of being fleishik legabe basa b'chalav is a din d'rabana, not a din d'araisa, but still, a chicken is fleishik, and so therefore the eggs that come out of it are parv, right? Weren't they fleishik at one point in time? The answer, of course, is yes, meaning that the developing eggs inside are, in fact, of course, fleishik. If you were to shech the bird and you found a brood of eggs developing inside, those eggs are going to be fleishik. So when exactly do the eggs move from being a status of fleishik to a status of parf? It's a wonderful question. And the Gemara in Beitza towards the beginning, thereabouts, Daf Vav, in Beitza, discusses that very question.
The same thing.
Okay, good.
Milk the same?
Is milk the same? We're going to be discussing that later in the Masechta. Oh. It's coming up around Kuf Zayin, Kuf Ches, thereabouts. Right? Right? What's it called? Coming attractions. Okay. Anyway, that's a question which we're not going to be dealing with today. But we are going to be dealing with today something, I would say, just as basic. And that is, where can I go buy my eggs? So in other words, so I know now that an egg coming from a kosher bird is kosher, and that coming from a non-kosher bird is not kosher. So presumably now, just like when I buy my kosher food, I have to go for somebody who's Naaman, and presumably would be a Jew. Same thing is true regarding an egg. And the first thing we're going to be learning is that that's not true. In other words, in the purchasing of eggs, so I can go to a Jew or to a non-Jew in terms of purchasing my eggs. Now, how can that be? In other words, those eggs may not be kosher. So stay tuned as the sugya is going to unfold. Tana Rabbanan. Lochim beitzim ena ovdei kochavim. One is allowed to purchase eggs from a non-Jew. B'chol makom. And it doesn't matter where you are. Ve'in choshesh in lomishum develes v'shol lomishum treifus. And you don't have to be concerned whether or not the egg comes from either an avela or a treifa. If the egg resulted from a bird which was an avela, so the egg, of course, would be not kosher. If the egg resulted from a bird which is a treifa, that too would also be not kosher. Now, mind you, by the way, we had a debate just a couple of days ago whether or not a treifa is yoledes or ain't a yoledes. And we had a discussion debate amongst that earlier in this parak. But in the meantime, however, the Gemara is bothered by a very simple question. V'dilma dov tamininu. I don't understand. You're buying an egg from an unknown source. You don't know what bird it came from. And you're buying it from somebody who doesn't keep kosher. You're buying it from a non-Jew. So what assurances do you have that the egg that you're buying is in fact kosher? And that's the Gemara's question, and it's so pasha. Now, the Amar Avua Dishmuel Ba'omer Sha'ov Ploni Tahor. So even before we get to the answer, okay, let's pause here for just a moment. So we're buying an egg, and it's an unknown source, and so the Gemara says, and how can you do that? Tosus is over here, really interesting. Bottom Tosus is on the Amud. Vim Tomer. Kevin to office Taharim Havaruba Nazo Basarov. Let's go to a point that we made in yesterday's daf. Do you know that of the world population of birds, do you know the vast majority of them are kosher? Only a minority of the birds are non-kosher. That's what we learned in yesterday's daf. Okay, so if I'm buying an egg and it's coming from an undisclosed source, and I don't know with the bird that laid it, so why don't we just base ourselves on the principle of Rov? And the majority of birds in this world are in fact kosher. So if I have an egg and I don't know the source of it, where it came from, So then why don't we just simply say Rov dictates that it comes from a kosher bird. So Betosus gives questions fascinating. Answer as well. So Haviruba Nazo Basaruba Ulafima Shapirashi Demar Bekamaminim Nicha. So Tosus says, well, based on what I told you yesterday, it actually makes sense. What did Tosus tell us yesterday? So he basically said as follows. In terms of species, there are more kosher species than there are non-kosher species. In terms of actual birds, that might not be true. In other words, in terms of the bird population, so even though the number of species are greater for kosher than non-kosher, but in terms of actual birds, so those non-kosher birds may in fact outnumber the kosher birds. If that's true, now Tosus posited that in yesterday's daf. Now, if that's true, it's a wonderful answer to our question right now. So yes, there are more kosher species, but that doesn't necessarily mean there are more of the kosher birds. Okay, that's one answer. Tosos offers another suggestion as well. Really, really wonderful give and take in Tosos. Back to our Gemara. So Amar Avua de Shmuel, third line from the bottom. Ba'omer Shal Ploni Tahor. So you know what? You know how you know it's kosher? Because he said it's kosher. Now that, of course, also is interesting because now this gets onto an issue of ne'amanus, of credibility. So normally when we talk about credibility, who's extended credibility? So a Jew's extended credibility. And when it comes to Issa v'heter, so Eid Echa Neman B'Issurin, as we learned in the first daf in Gittin, right? Beis Amud Beis. So one Eid is Neman when it comes to Issa. But generally speaking, I need a Jew. And over here, we're relying on the Neman instead of a non-Jew. So how does that work? What was one second? V'lei Mishal of Tahor. What I need the guy to say is shall of ploni tahor, that he has to actually specify which bird it was. The Gemara says, why does he even have to say so much? V'lei Mishal of Tahor. Maybe it's just simply, why doesn't he just simply say that it's an of Tahor, it's a kosher bird? So Iyachi Yisrael Lishtemutate. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you the problem. The problem is if he just simply says it's a kosher bird, so then you can't pin him down. And if you can't pin him down, so then he's not extended credibility. So basically now what we have now is a window of understanding in terms of why it is that we believe him in this situation. And that is, and take a look at Rashi. Rashi says it. Sha'ov ploni tahor, v'ani yodim sha'oso of tahor hu. V'davar sha'anu yecholon la'avchin u'la'avi beitze oso of liros imdomim la'elu lo mishakir. If it's verifiable, if he says something which becomes verifiable, so then he's not going to lie. Generally speaking, you're right. When it comes to a non-Jew, so we don't extend him the credibility to say something is kosher versus non-kosher. But once he puts himself out there and he says something now that is verifiable, so then we have now every right to believe him. And that's why he has to say it specifically belongs to this particular bird. Because if he just simply says, oh, don't worry, this egg comes from a kosher bird. Which one? I don't know. But it comes from a kosher bird. So now it's no longer verifiable because we simply don't know what bird it came from. And if we later discover it comes from a non-kosher bird, he could just simply say, oh, no, it came from another bird. And he could just simply slip out of that statement. But once he tacks on exactly which bird it came from, so now he has opened himself to scrutiny. And we can verify his statement. And under those circumstances, he is not going to lie.
So the shape of the egg is different.
We didn't get the shape yet.
How did he recognize? But how will he know that the egg comes from the bird?
Hold on a second. We didn't talk about shape yet. So far, all we're simply saying is that we believe him based on the fact that it's verifiable. Now it's verifiable because every bird lays a different type of egg. Even without knowing what the shapes are, we're going to get to that in just a moment. But still, I can take this egg compared to this bird that he claims it comes from, and I can verify. Now, v'livdo b'simanim. And so now this brings us to the next part of today's daf, and that is the following. Isn't there a particular shape of a kosher egg versus a non-kosher egg? And so what we're going to be discussing over the course of a good part of today's daf is the shapes of eggs. And so what the Gemara wants to now know is that maybe the shape of an egg is going to be telling in terms of whether it comes from a kosher or a non-kosher bird. The lift up is the money to tell you, look at our quotes the following. You know, the simanim for birds is the same as the simanim of fish. And of course we know that's not correct. And the Gemara immediately edits that line. Simani dagim sagadachas napi v'kakesas amarachmana. So fish, of course, are fins and scales, and so therefore we're not looking for fins and scales, not in the birds, and not in the eggs of birds. So clearly, we have to edit the brisa, the Gemara does so. So ela ima kach simane ubre dagim. Eggs of bird and the eggs of fish, right, commonly referred to as roe, so they are similar in shape. That's the comparison. So if you take a look at the eggs of a bird and the eggs of the fish, they're going to be sharing the same characteristics. Vitanya, we learned in a brisa, gabi beitzim, elo insimani beitzim, kol shekadurus vagugalos, so it has to be round and round. Why does the brisa over here say round and round? Because, in other words, not just cylindrical, but round meaning like a ball, like in both dimensions. So the so it has to be round, like a ball. Rosho echad kad, rosho echad chad. One side of it is going to be tapered, and the other side is going to be wide. Now, I could just simply say to you, over here, it's very simple to describe. It's like an egg. You know what shape the Gemara is describing right now? The shape of an egg, chicken. Right? The chicken egg. So tahora. So if you see it shaped like that, so then it's going to be tahora. However, base rosheh kadim or base rosheh kadim tameim. But if both sides are going to be wider, if both sides are going to be tapered, so then it's not going to be good. It's tamei. So it has to have this asymmetrical form to it, where one side is tapered and the other side is wide. Now, not only is that going to be a telltale sign of a kosher egg, but also the relationship between the white and the yolk. Now, the white, I know there's a fancier name for it. It's called albumin. In fact, the Gemara's terminology for it is very similar to the way we say it in the, you know, in the anatomical sense. But if you don't mind, I'll just simply use white and yellow. It's easier. So the chalba mi b'chutz v'chalba mi b'fnim. So if the white's on the outside and the yellow's on the inside, again, tahor is kosher, like an egg. Right, crack open egg, and if you hard boil it, you'll see it even clearer. But you crack open egg, and you're going to see that the yolk of obviously is in the interior, and the white, the albumin, is on the outside surrounding it. And that is a sign of a kosher egg. However, chalbim mibechutz vechalbim mibefnim tameya. If you have it inverted, so that's a non-kosher egg. And chalbim vechalbim urav zebezeh. Now, let's say the white and the yolk are intermingled one with another. Biyadua she beitzas hasheretz. Interesting, that's going to be the egg of a sheretz, right? Like a toad, like an alligator. In other words, the eggs are going to have an interspersion of the white and the yellow. The Gemara later on is going to sit on that last line of the brisa, but for our purposes right now, our chief focus is going to be on the shape of an egg being a determinant as to whether or not it's a kosher bird, kosher, non-kosher bird, and of course, subsequently, kosher egg, non-kosher egg. So the Gemara is obviously now in the middle of asking a very simple question. If the shape of the egg is all we need, so then I don't even need him, I don't need to ask him a question, and he doesn't have to give me a report as to who the mother is. I just look at the shape of the egg, and we're done. And why do we start off our entire sugya this morning asking him, hey, where does this egg come from? I don't need him. I just look at the shape. So the Gemara says, L'tricha dechatuchos. So the Gemara says, well, the egg is already opened up. So the Gemara says, okay, the egg is opened up, literally cut open. V'livdok b'chama v'chabon. So the Gemara says, okay, but still, even if I no longer have the shape of the egg, don't I have the white and the yellow? So the Gemara says, b'trufos, b'ka'ara. So the Gemara says, scrambled eggs. Scrambled eggs, so now I no longer have the shape of the egg. I no longer have the presentation of the white and the yellow. So the Gemara says, so now I need him. So the Gemara says, really? I'm going to be buying a scrambled egg from a guy. And mind you, by the way, when I say scrambled eggs, I don't want to be too misleading. We're not talking about ordering it in a restaurant. We're talking simply that he already opened it up and he basically made, you know, a bowl of immakeable. In other words, he took all the contents, put it into a bowl, scrambled it up. And so basically, so I'm saying scrambled eggs literally. Okay, that's just, in other words, we're not ordering, right, before frying it. So, v'chi agav nemiz avnin aminayin, the Gemara says, now, you're buying it from him? We're not allowed to buy it from him. V'hatanya Gemara quotes the brisa, it's a tosefta. Ein mochim beitzas trefa le'ovik kochavim. Ela im kein trufa beka'ara. L'fichach ein lokhim mehem beitzim trufim beka'ara. there are two halachas that are actually complementary one to another. If I have non-kosher scrambled eggs, I could sell it to a non-Jew. Therefore, I'm not allowed to buy scrambled eggs from a non-Jew, right? In other words, by virtue of the fact that the transaction of a scrambled egg is only one directional, it's only going from Jew to non-Jew, so therefore it's okay. Because, consider, if let's say, for whatever reason, I had non-kosher eggs, and I scrambled and I sold it to a non-Jew, if he were allowed to return and sell it back to another unsuspecting Jew, so then obviously we're fraught with problems. So because the Chachamim only allowed its transaction in one direction, so therefore it's okay to sell it to them because nobody's allowed to buy it from them because it's rabbinically banned mm-hmm. from doing so. So now the Gemara, with all this information now, what's the problem? If the eggs are actually scrambled, no one's buying it from a non-Jew. So therefore, it must be that the eggs are whole. Yeah. And if the eggs are whole, we have the simanim. And if we have the simanim, why do I have to ask him whether or not the mother was kosher or not kosher? So Ela Amar Rabbi Zera. So the Gemara says, okay. So what we're going to do is we're going to go back to the beginning of the sugya and we're going to change one of our original assumptions, which is simanim lav daraisa. We assume going into this discussion that the shape of the egg is all I need, and that will be the determinant of kosher or non-kosher. And what the Gemara now teaches us is not necessarily. It's not that simple. The Gemara makes a point which is so wonderful. It's such a good point. Go back to what we learned just a couple days ago in the Daf. And by the way, when I say a couple days ago, I mean yesterday. No, it was a couple days ago. Sorry. No. Okay. Eight birds which are in the status of Suffolk. We are unsure as to whether or not they are kosher or non-kosher. And so the Gemara says, and remember we had the discussion of, you know, the anatomical signs of the birds and Korka von Nikloff, and we're not sure if the gizzard peels well, it doesn't peel well, et cetera, et cetera. But in other words, for our purposes right now, let's just say it's simple. Eight different species of birds where we're unsure. We don't know if they're kosher or non-kosher. I got a great idea. Let them lay an egg. And let them lay an egg and check the shape of the egg. And if the shape of the egg is, in fact, an absolute determinant as to whether it's a kosher or non-kosher bird, so then eureka. We've got a solution to any bird which we're unclear or unsure as to whether it's kosher or non-kosher. So it's the point of the Gemara right now is so strong. It's so wonderful. Therefore, what must it be? That the shape in of itself is not an absolute determinant. The shape by itself is not going to be enough for us to simply say definitively whether kosher or not kosher. And even as I say that really clearly and confidently, that's not perfectly accurate. The Gemara now is going to sharpen the statement. So if shape is not a determinant, so what have we been doing for a good part of this morning? If shape doesn't mean anything. So what shape means something, just not everything. And the Gemara goes on to clarify. Here's what shape can tell us. Shape can tell us definitively that it's not kosher. So for example, if it's a symmetrical shape of an egg, where either both ends are tapered, or both ends are rounded, and so it's got a nice symmetrical shape, no good. Meaning, definitively not kosher. Or, if when opened up, the white and the yellow are inverted, the yellow's on the outside, the white's on the inside, definitively not kosher. That we could say. However, if, however, it's the asymmetrical shape of what we are used to seeing by an egg, and the white and the yellow are in alignment, meaning the yellow's on the inside, the white's on the outside, and the amalachashal ploni tarahu smoch aleihem. And on top of that, if he tells you that it's coming from a kosher bird, so under those circumstances, so then everything checks out. However, bistama lotismoch aleihem. However, if he just simply sells you the egg, and even though it looks like a kosher egg, and it has the right shape, and the white and the yellow are configured correctly, that's not enough without a statement. Why not? Because there are some non-kosher eggs that do, in fact, mimic both the shape and the presentation of the white and the yellow. And as a result of that, so even though the shape and the white and the yellow check properly, there still exists a chance that this is coming from a non-kosher bird. And because now of that chance, so therefore we'll allow him to clarify, him meaning the non-Jewish seller of the egg, will allow him to clarify and say that this in fact comes from a kosher bird. He has to identify which bird it is. And again, I'll go back to the beginning of what we said in the beginning of Shir this morning. And why do we believe him? Because it's verifiable. And once the statement becomes verifiable, so therefore we have the right to believe him.
How can we buy eggs from a supermarket?
Say, what,
nobody's telling you anything.
I mean, they're marketing it as a chicken egg, so they are.
It doesn't say
chicken eggs. Okay, I got to go out to the store more often. Okay.
In Costco, it does say.
Okay.
In Costco, it does say because it says on organic or whatever, you know, like farm something.
Okay. Yeah.
The question: why you believe him more with eggs than with milk?
Then with milk, milk is not verifiable. Oh, well, the truth of the matter, or the Gemara, okay, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah has milk becomes its own unique issue. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah talks about the mixing of the two milks together. Okay, anyway, it's a different issue. Amar, Chabon v'chamon moravin zebezeb yadushi beitzat zasheretz. Okay, so now that we have clarified, I say clarified, it does become a little bit confusing. But at least now we have a way of formulating the shape of the eggs and whether that is emblematic of a kosher, non-kosher egg. So now we're going to go to the last statement of the Braisa, where the Braisa tells us that if we have the white and the yellow that are mixed together, it's intermingled, so that is a Beitzas Sheretz. And the Gemara is going to ask such a wonderful question, who cares? meaning, to clarify the Gemara's question, meaning it's not a kosher bird, and so it's an egg coming now from a non-kosher bird, so it's coming from a Sheretz, that's great. So put that on National Geographic. Meaning, why are we learning about it as a halacha? So I take it back. We do care, but we care from a point of interest, not from a point of Gemara, not from a point of halacha. So Amar Mar Chamam Chamam Moravin Zebezeb Yadushi Beitzas Hasheretz Lamai Hilchasa. So what difference does it make in terms of halacha? It's not kosher. Isn't that enough information? So Amar Avukva Bar Chamal Amar Sheim Rikma Vinikma Bicha Adasha Mitame or Mitame. I'm just reading the side where it's edited. Mitame Bicha Adasha. So the Gemara says like this. Once I now know that the contents of this egg is actually a sheretz, so what do we know regarding certain shratzim? Certain shratzim give off tumah. So if there's now a hole in the egg, and I were to now take my finger and touch the contents of that which is inside, so then I'm going to become tummy. Now, interesting. With the shell on, you do not become tummy. Because what do we know regarding a sheretz? A sheretz only transmits tumah binigia. You need to actually make physical contact with the corpse of a sheretz. And by the way, another basic important point, and that is that the sheretz only gives off tumah after it's dead, not while it's alive. So in other words, the case over here is extraordinarily limited. So the developing sheretz inside the egg has to be dead. There has to be a hole in the shell of the egg where you touch it. But once we now know that it is in fact the egg of a sheretz, it's going to give off tumah. So the Gemara says, Maskev l'ravina v'dama d'nachashi. Okay, so you have an egg and we know it belongs to a sheretz. We don't know which sheretz it belongs to. So you're going to tell me now that absolutely the person is going to be tameh. You're going to be tameh because you touched it. All you know is that it's a sheretz. There are only 8 shratzim that give off tumah, and the vast majority of shratzim in the world do not give off tumah. It could be the egg of a snake, which interestingly enough does not give off tuma. So as the Gemara says, Elam Aravas, the Gemara says, you're right. Shimrikma va'achla loka elamishum sheretz asheretz al aretz. So the Gemara says, okay, another nafkamina, la halacha. And that is as if I eat the contents of that egg, so one is going to be subject to malchus because he ate a sheretz. So in other words, the halachic point is that it is, we say definitively it's a sheretz, and we say it definitively so that the person who eats it, if going through the due process of Edom, Hasra, etc., so he's going to get malchus. The Gemara says, okay, yehachi ma'irya de tamei afilo de taranami. The Gemara asks a really interesting question. What about if it's a chick, a developing chick inside of an egg that's kosher? Are you allowed to eat that chick that's developing inside? So the answer is no. For a moment, the Gemara is going to think that this is an Issa Daraisa. And the Gemara has actually good reason to think so, because we're going to base it on a pasuk. So the Gemara says that you're telling me that if I eat the contents of the sheretz egg, so I'm going to be subject to malchus. You know the same thing is going to be true if I eat the contents of a kosher egg, and one is not allowed to eat it until it hatches and it starts developing. Now I'm going to, in a moment, explain what that means, starts developing. The Tanya, the Gemara quotes the Brisa. Kol ha-sheretz ha-sheretz al-aretz l'rabos, we're on the top of Samach Talmud base. L'rabos ha-frochim sh'l'niftechu einehem. So if you have a chick, even after it hatches, but its eyes aren't open yet, it qualifies as a sheretz. The consumer of said chick is going to be in violation of the Isser HaTorah of eating shrotzim. And right now the Gemara says, so big deal, we've identified what the sheretz egg looks like. Even if it's a kosher egg, if I eat the contents inside of it, I'm going to be in violation of eating a sheretz. So that's the Gemara's question. The Gemara right now, for a moment, is thinking that this is an Issa Daraisa. The Gemara now goes into correction mode. Mid Rabbanim v'keras machta ba'ama. Eating a super undeveloped chick is not an Issa Daraisa. It's an Issa Darabbanan. Issa Darabbanan, that is... I'm taking a guess right now. In other words, it's mias. It's just simply it's disgusting. It's unbecoming. That's my best way to describe why the Chachamim gave an Isser, right? But I'm just guessing. I really don't know. But in other words, but that it's an Isser Darabban, not an Isser Daraisa. So there still is value, halachic value, in knowing the egg of a sheretz, because once you know the egg of a sheretz and someone to eat it and to do so bemeizid, it, he'd be violating an Issa Daraisa. As opposed to eating an undeveloped chick, where that is wrong, it's an Issa Darabanan, but it's not an Issa Daraisa. Yes? Oh, you can eat the egg? Oh, I'm sorry. You for sure can eat the egg that's inside. A question which I asked in the beginning of Shir today, is it fleishik or is it parf? Right. Which the Gemara here does not discuss. The Gemara discusses that back in Beitza. Okay, Tanu Rabbanan. Gi'ulei Beitza mutaros, Beitza muzaros nefesh yafetochlam. If I have, let's say, the taste of non-kosher eggs. Rashi over here on the top of the Amud, super interesting Rashis. Gi'ulei Beitzim, Beitza tamei shenizbashla im hatahora. I have a non-kosher egg and a kosher egg that are being cooked together in the same pot. So it would be mutter. Why? Next Rashi. So atahorin. Now, obviously, not the non-kosher eggs. Mm-hmm. The non-kosher eggs are not kosher. Yeah. It just simply means that if any taste it comes out of the non-kosher eggs, it's not going to impact and affect those kosher eggs that are being boiled in the same pot. Why not? So Rashi writes, atahorin demaya ba'amuhu v'lo yavi tamayu b'achrenaisa. Because there's no real taste that's exuding. Let's make this point as clearly as possible. When we have kosher and non-kosher being cooked in the same pot together, and the non-kosher is exuding a taste into the pot, that's called tam in halacha. We're going to be spending a good part of this mesechta later on talking about these ideas and these concepts of tam. And tam ki'ikar. And the rule that we're going to be seeing later in the Masechta is that the taste of a non-kosher food is just as non-kosher as the actual food itself. And so therefore, if I have the taste of non-kosher that penetrated into kosher food, that kosher food is now not kosher. Clear. However, when it comes to eggs, there's no real taste that's exuding, that's coming out of the egg. The way Rashi describes it, I'm quoting the Rashi again, Maya Ba'alma. It's a tasteless liquid that comes out. And so therefore there's no real tam, and because there's no real tam, so then it's not going to be usser. Now again, to be as clear as possible, you can't eat the non-kosher egg under any circumstance. It's just all we're saying is that whatever taste comes out of that non-kosher egg and goes into the pot and goes into the other egg is a tasteless taste, and therefore it's not going to impart any kind of prohibited taste to the kosher eggs.
You can even, use the water, drink.
I mean, you do have to take into consideration bittul, meaning that there has to be more kosher water than non-kosher, but yes.
No.
Okay. So geula beitzim mutaros, beitzim muzaros, nefesh afetochlam. An egg that is muzar, Rashi, unfertilized, shein shel zachar ve'ein efroch kalut behem la'olam. And it never had any kind of developing chick inside of it. So then nefesh yafetochlam. A kind soul is allowed to eat them. When we say kind soul over here, the Gemara is speaking euphemistically. The Gemara just basically means somebody who has got an iron constitution. Somebody who has no problem ingesting and eating a raw egg.
That's squeamish.
Right. Nimsa ala karadam. Now, what if you find a blood spot in an egg? Okay, and here are really interesting Gemara today. We're talking about blood spots in the egg. Blood spots in the egg that are being discussed right now almost have nothing to do with the blood spots that we sometimes discover in an egg. All the eggs that we buy in our stores are unfertilized. Every one of them, right? No chance that those eggs were fertilized, right? We are talking about major, major egg production facilities, and the whole point of these facilities is to produce unfertilized eggs, right? So when we do find a blood spot in our eggs, so really it is not connected, not related to our Gemara whatsoever. Our Gemara is describing a blood spot being the beginning of the developing chick inside of an egg. So the halacha, which maybe I'll discuss at the very end about blood spots in our eggs today, is really unconnected to what we are about to discuss in our Gemara. Because in our Gemara, when we're discussing a blood spot, what we're really discussing is the beginning of fertilization. Or what happens is that the male is going to be inserting his zera into the egg, and thereby fertilizing the egg. And what's going to happen is that this developing chick is first going to attach itself right on the border between the white and the yellow. And it's basically going to get its nutrition from the yellow. The yolk sac is all the nutrients for the developing chick inside of the egg. And so good. So now what happens when I discover I'm going to call it a blood spot, but understand, when I say blood spot right now, I really mean the first development of the chicken side. So, nim sala karadam zorek es adam v'ochas ashar. No problem. So you take it, you move it aside, and you enjoy and you eat the rest of the egg. Because what you did is you took away the chick, and now the rest of the egg is totally fine. Now, amar of Yirmiyah v'hush nimsa al kesher shala. Now, you have to be very careful, writes Rav Yirmiyah, exactly where this first developing chick is discovered. It has to be discovered on the kesher. Rashi over here writes, "Who zerah shatarnigol akasher barosha kad shel beitza umisham yitziras haefroach mitchilas." Like I described, but I described it because I saw Rashi. In other words, we're really now describing the beginning of the formation of a chick. The kevin da adayin who sham lo nispazir b'shar haBeitza. Because now it is just developing on this kesher, on this point of connection between the white and the yellow, we now know that it has not spread out through the rest of the egg. Hilkach ochel hashar. Therefore, you're allowed to eat the rest of the egg. Aval. Continuing in Rashi. Nimsa alchal monshalah. But let's say we find it now somewhere in the album, somewhere in the white. So in the yolk already. Nimsa alchamon shala kula asur kedemafarsh lakamen deshada tichla bekula nispashet hakilkul bekula. Once now it has gone into the yolk, so at that point in time now the tichla is a hard word to translate. It's vileness. It's badness. Sorry, not great words, I know, but it's status now is going to spread out through the rest of the egg, and you're not allowed to eat the rest of the egg. Let's go back to the Gemara. We're going to see all this inside in the Gemara. Amar Rav Yirmiyah v'hushin imsa kesher shala. Tenidu stayavu derav afteriki lo shenu elo shenimsa chalbon shala. Aval nimsa achamon shala afilo beitza asura. And the Gemara over here says basically the same exact point. Once you find the newly developing chick inside of this egg, so then the entire egg becomes asur in the yellow. Here's the expression we have in the Gemara. because the tichla now has spread out through the rest of the egg. Amalei Rav Gavir mi Beik Sila Rav Ashi Ibcha Tani Tana Kamei Da Abaye. When somebody was teaching this price over to Abaye, he flipped it around. In other words, he had the developing chick going in the white, like I flipped it around just a couple moments earlier. So he flipped around the brisa, and Abai corrected him. Va'abai hu t'terasta ni'alei hachi. And Abai just simply said, "You got it wrong. Let me help you." It's when the developing chick now goes into the yolk. At that point in time, now the entire egg becomes prohibited. Amir chizkei minan lebeitzas t'meshi asur min haTorah. How do I know that an egg of a non-kosher bird is going to be not kosher? Now, it's an interesting question of the Gemara, because if you go back to what I said in the very beginning of Shir today, called Hayotzim and Atame, Tame, anything that emanates from that which is not kosher is not kosher. So stay tuned, because as we're going to see, it could be that when we're talking about milk, that's called Hayotzim and Atame, which is Tame. And we're talking about fetuses, obviously the same thing is true as well. Eggs may be a little bit different. And the reason why eggs may be a little bit different is because the development of the egg, although occurs somewhat in the bird, also a lot of its development and the fetus inside also occurs outside of the bird as well. But anyway, the Gemara now goes on to clarify. So in the, we go back to Parsha Shmini, we go back to the 11th parak of Sefer Vayikra, and here, one of the 20 birds being described over there is the Ya'ana, but it's not called the Ya'ana. It's called the Bas Ya'ana. Now, a little bit of crack research that I did right before Shir today. All right, we think the Ya'ana is the ostrich. Although, once again, like I said a lot lately, we're not sure. But anyway, there's a good chance it's the ostrich. So, but anyway, the Bas Ya'ana, what is that? The daughter of the ostrich? Why would the Torah be describing a species using the word daughter of the ostrich? Oh, wait one second. V'chi Bas Yesh Lo Ya'ana Ela Ezezu Beitz Atmeya. Ah, it's the egg. That's what the Gemara right now is suggesting, to which the Gemara deflects the proof. So the Gemara says, how do I know? Maybe that's the actual name of the species. The species is actually called Bas Ya'ana. So the Gemara says, yeah, the Pasuk in Eicha describes it as Ya'ana, not the Bas Ya'ana. The Gemara quotes another pasuk from Micha that describes it as the Benos Ya'ana, or in the singular, Bas Ya'ana. So the Gemara says, Kiyana Zushim et Abel Sabaneha. So the Gemara says, no, we could darshan the pasuk in Micha, meaning the name of the species is really Ya'ana, and the pasuk in Micha is just simply describing how it mourns over its offspring. Another pasuk in Navi Yeshayahu describing the Benos Ya'ana, again, seemingly the name of the species, and the Gemara deflects, Ki'ana Zushis Shochenes Im Bana. It just simply means that it dwells with its child. Tanim Ubanos Ya'ana. Again, another pasuk, also in Yeshayahu, describing the Benos Ya'ana. Visa Gadacha Beitza Bas Meimar Shirahi. Now, the pasuk over here is describing the egg. Now, do you think the egg is saying Shira? Although, oddly enough, we just saw that we have the Perek Shira, and also we have that by the Az Yashir, right? We have the Ubrim saying Shira. Okay, but anyway. But the Gemara says, Eleksiva Yana, Viksiva Bas Ya'ana. So the Gemara says, look, we have Ya'ana as a species, we have Bas Ya'ana also as a species as well. The Gemara basically concedes we have too much evidence that the Bas Ya'ana is also a species. Shani Hachad, the Pasuk Safra, L'shtei Tevos. So the Gemara says, but I know that in the Torah, in Parsha Shmini, Bas Ya'ana is not the name of the species, but it rather refers to the offspring of the ostrich. How do I know that? Because if you open up a Chumash, open up a Sefer Torah, and you look at the word inside in the Sefer Torah, Bas Ya'ana is not one word, but rather it's two words. And the Gemara says, Umedepasikli Safra Betarte, Tevish Mamina Shrei Shemoth Ninu. So as we turn now to the top of Samachay Amad Aleph, so the Gemara says, because now it's two words, so therefore it's two things. So the Gemara says, really? Is that really right? Ela Mi'ata Eskedar La'omer. The pasuk Lucifer betray Hachinami the Tartishmaininu. So in the war, in the beginning of Parshas Lach Lecha, where it describes Kedar LaOmer. Kedar LaOmer is the name of one of the kings. We know it's one of the kings. So the Torah actually tells us how many kings there are. Kedar LaOmer counts as one king. And meanwhile, open up a Sefer Torah, and it's Kedar with a pause, with a break, and LaOmer. And so just because the Torah breaks it up into two words does not necessarily mean that it's actually two words, meaning it's two names. It's just one name, but like hyphenated, if you will. I'm just giving an example. So the Gemara says, the pasuk Lucifer b'chei hachinami d'tarshish maininu amre. So they said the following answer in the yeshiva: Hasam b'chei tevas pasuk lu b'chei shitam la pasuk lu avahach afilu b'chei shitam nami pasuk lu. So the Gemara says there's going to be a difference between basyan and kedar laomer. Kedar laomer, yes, it's true, it's hyphenated. There is a kedar and a laomer in the two words, but what the sofer will never do is they'll never put the kedar in one line and laomer in the next line. He's going to make sure that they come out in the same line to make sure that people know that it's the name of one king. However, bas yana, there really are two words. Because the name of the species is yana. The word bas over there means the offspring of the yana. And that comes to teach us that in this particular context, it means the egg of the yana. Hence coming to teach us that the egg of a non-kosher bird is in fact non-kosher.